Gregoire and Dan Beeston are smart enough to know better.
Welcome to episode 209 of Smart Enough to Know Better.
We are a podcast of science.
And comedy.
And ignorance.
I'm Dan Beeston.
And I'm Gregoire.
And in this episode of Smart Enough to Know Better, I'm going to moisten your tubes.
And I'm going to fall down, go boom.
Then leave the art to the artists. But before we get there, Gregoire, what happened to you this week in science?
On this very day, Dan, that we are recording, a bit earlier than, of course, people are going to be listening, it is Easter Friday.
We haven't, like, my God, if we could release the podcast before we recorded it, they would never get done.
It's just fine. Time travel. We just have to show we do it sometime in our life. You're like, oh no, it's old men going, we've destroyed the timeline.
And we've got 180 podcasts we have to record.
Oh God. That would be.
Could we just get the ones that are already up there and download it and then publish that?
It all depends if you've got feedback from one of the ready. Anyway, it's Easter Friday, sometimes called Good Friday. For Christians, it's a very important little holiday day. And it made me sort of think about the idea of why we have Easter and the
Christ died for our sins. This is a science podcast, you realize.
No. I mean, why Easter is when it is. It's always interesting to me.
This is when Christ died for his sins, sure.
Yes, sure. But
sorry, actually, before I get called up there, Christ didn't die for his sins. He died for our sins. He didn't have any sins, as I understand it.
But if Jesus was God and God is everything, then they were his sins. Burnt at the taste like a Gnostic heretic that I am. All right. So Easter is always the first Sunday after the first full moon after the equinox, the March equinox.
Yep.
So that would be the spring equinox of the Northern Hemisphere and the autumnal equinox for the correct hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And that's always interested me. Like when you remember, you go, oh, that's right. It's such a weird way. Why the first Sunday after the first full moon after the equinox? Why not just say the first Sunday after the equinox? What's the point of that separate, that other bit, right? I see the equinox. You want to have it a certain time. So you wait for the equinox. You make it a Sunday. Boom. So has
the Easter, or at least the pagan thing that they pinched it off, has that been around since before the calendar was correct?
Because
Easter was like the first Sunday of like July, you wouldn't get to have Easter until after Julius Caesar was around.
I see what you're saying. No, in this case, no, that's not the reason. No, this is the transformation into the Gregorian calendar. It's at this time. It is definitely connected to the equinox. So therefore it's going to be connected to the solar year in some way. Mm. So it's going to always fall at roughly this time of year. So that's not going to change how many times you move, like whatever calendar system you use. We've connected it to a solar event. Mm-hmm. But why we added in a lunar event? Why is it a solar event, lunar event, date? What's the reason for that? And so I did some research. I needed to find out the reason why. So it all goes back to the Nicene Council of earlier on. Oh, I did write this down. 325 AD. There we go. There are my notes. They were saying all these Christian sects were all having different times for Easter. We have to pull them all back into together. So how are we going to do that? And I said, okay, well, we know from the Jewish tradition that Jesus was returning to celebrate Passover. So the Jewish celebration of Passover, I had to look up that because I have very little knowledge of Judaism. And that was the Exodus from Egypt. So like, hooray. And that's connected to rebirth. So they always try and make it the same time, but that's a lunar thing. That's around the same sort of lunar event.
Right. So it's a lunar event, but a real new buds of spring type.
Yes. Right. And they time it so that it got, so Passover for, I don't think Passover happens when they thought people left Egypt. That wasn't part of the story. They just make it so that eight Jewish months after the start of the year, their new year starts in October, September. And what we call October, September. And so when the number of months passes on that date, that's their Passover, which is a certain number of dates. They said, okay, we know from the old stories that Jesus supposedly came back at that time. So we have to make it around Passover. We shouldn't make it around that. And they said, well, that's all around Easter. And that's all around the equinox. And that's the reason we have the lunar calendar part. That's for Passover. So we go to the equinox, and equinox gives us the time of the year, spring, roughly. Spring in the Northern Hemisphere, autumn in the correct hemisphere. and it then goes to the lunar calendar, so the Judaism lunar calendar, that's not the right word, and then put the Sunday after that because that's an important day for Christianity and I guess other people as well. So that's the reason we have this weird, yeah, Sunday after a full moon after equinox. So it's a linking of a solar calendar, a lunar calendar, and then just picking the day.
See, this just makes me pine for that decimal time that you were talking about a couple of podcasts ago.
Yeah. I love looking into calendars. I learned that the Judaism calendar starts in September, October. That's pretty cool. But yeah, that was my week in science, going down and finding out all the ways of people can write things down. Once again, it all comes down to the moon and the sun every time. It makes a lot of sense. They're the bright things in the sky. How else are you going to do it? Growing of trees? Weathering of rocks? Yeah, probably not.
Weathering of rock. I mean, that's kind of what we're aiming for with like kilos and stuff. Like all the other measurements in the universe are like, let's get some rocks and count what happens to the rocks.
How much rock do we have?
Light goes. What we need to do is we need a calendar based on how fast light travels. Would that work?
Yeah. Well,
let's find out how far light travels in a year and then base our calendar on that.
We can calculate that. We can send a...
Hang on. That might be a bit circular.
Well, what you could do, you could put a mirror out into space, like fly a mirror out at sublight speeds, obviously, and then get it out as far... It would take so long, but you send it out as far as light can travel in half a year, and then you fire a laser beam at it.
You're still basing this all on a year, though.
Well, yes, that's
so our calendar can't just be based on a year because that's what it is now.
But we can calculate it more accurately because it'll be like, when the light returns, that's the end of the year.
What you need to do is you need to get a million cubes that are the same cubes that we measure the kilogram from.
Right.
And you measure them out, you get a million of them and then count how fast the light year goes for that. And however long that is, that's your year.
That's your year. Okay. How about one? Why don't you just have a unit of one? One. And that's your year.
Is it gone? Oh, I missed Christmas.
Happy New Year. I'm so old. How was your week in science, Dan? Which 700 just passed.
I mentioned in the last podcast that I got a VR headset, and I've been really enjoying it. It's been very immersive. I was playing a game recently. The sensations are very visceral.
Ooh.
I could see everything around me. I could hear everything around me. I could almost smell and feel the sensations. And then I realized, Gregoire, that I could smell and feel the sensations.
Uh-oh.
And those sensations felt and smelled like ants. And I realized that I had an ant on my face. And this realization was followed by a second realization regarding a second and third ant on my face. And I took off the headset to find half a dozen very excited ants clambering all over it. And I unclipped the mask and gave it a bang on the table and dozens of ants came out. It was horrifying. They had decided to take up residence in the headset.
Mm.
So some ants are attracted to warm, dark, tight spaces. And a VR headset ticks a lot of boxes there.
Yeah.
So much so that after clearing them out, they returned the next day to do the whole thing again. There's also something else in a VR headset that appeals to ants. Sweat.
Yeah, I was trying to say, all your skin and sweat and, yummy, yummy, yummy.
Yep, sweat contains...
I must admit, when you're asleep, I love to just sometimes come over and just lick all that wonderful sweat off your forehead. It just keeps me going. I thought that was deer. Well, I prefer sweetie, but deer's okay.
No, that's not. So sweat contains moisture and sugars and salts. The VR device heats up during use and basically bakes your forehead. So there's nowhere for the sweat to go. So it all accumulates in the mask. So now we've got food, we've got water, we've got shelter and warmth. Yes, it's an ant sauna.
Nice. And they've got a big, massive, wall-sized television to watch when they're bored.
Well, I am wondering if the ants are investors in the tech. Like, it's so perfectly designed for them. So over in the US, there is a species called the crazy ant. And it's called that because it votes Republican, I believe.
My joke was going to be, that's where you get your cheapest headsets from. Come on down to crazy ants. Our VR sets are very cheap.
You want Centrail? We got Centrail. We got hundreds of Centrail.
I got Centrail coming out of my ass, because that's where it comes from.
Due to shipping event, we are overstocked with sugar grains. I think I managed to subtly move from a kind of racist Persian accent over to Strong Bad.
Oh, okay, good. Like, well done.
Strong
good
Bad accent, which is okay. Less offensive, I think.
I must admit, I was wondering what accent I was doing. I'm not good at accents. I was definitely, I don't know what it is. So I apologize if you're a listener and you're like, that was a terrible version of my accent. It wasn't on purpose. It's just I just went, what doesn't sound like
it? If you think that
like
was your accent, listener, then maybe you've got two big props on your particular dialect. Yeah. Oh, everything sounds like your accent and you can get offended. No one cares about your accent, listener.
Oh.
Although that does sound like a segment. I get people to record stuff and then we'll do their accent. maybe. We'll blue sky that. Okay, so the crazy ant. This species reproduces very quickly and nests inside all sorts of electric devices. So they short out the device, electrocuting the ants, and the survivors release an alarm scent. And that alarm scent indicates to other ants that they should rush towards that scent, ready to fight.
Right.
So, and then the whole thing starts again. So they destroy air conditioning units and water pumps and are a complete menace. And this particular type of ant, they don't really go for many of the popular ant baits either. So they're kind of hard to control.
Yeah, they really like air conditioners. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, nice and cool.
They got a taste of them for your VR headsets.
At any rate, I solved my problem by storing my headset on a hook rather than on a surface. They do not appear to be interested in walking down a strut to access the device. So I no longer have to worry about ants on my face and I can focus on the head crabs. I need to move a lot of air. Now, I've got a great set of bellows to do that job, Gregoire. But the tricky part is this air needs to be pretty clean. I need to filter it. I've got this great big tunnel and I've got this dynamic webbing in the tube. So I wet the webbing and it traps particles as the air rushes past it.
Yeah.
So it's mostly clean air that gets through. Now, this webbing though, these particles are going to accrue on the webbing. So I need a way to remove them and dump them out. So along the edge of my tunnel, I've got these tiny, tiny conveyor belt things. The particles sink down the webbing and onto the conveyor belt, and they get slowly moved into a waste area where they're dissolved in acid.
Nice.
Yeah, which I admit is a bit of overkill, but I happen to have some acid around for another project.
Sure.
Now, both the large webbing and the tiny conveyor belts need to be sticky or they aren't going to work. If particulates get through to the bellows, it's this whole thing. So, do you see the problem, Gregoire?
Well, there's the stickiness. There's the stickiness going to the bellows. How do you stop that from happening?
That's not the problem I'm having to deal with.
Okay.
Dry air tends to take moisture with it.
Oh.
Moisture down in the bellows is not the hugest problem, but dry air in the webbing is a mess. So all this air is like drying out my tunnels.
Right. Okay. Yep.
So, in fact, the bellows work best when they're pliable and moist. We don't want them drying out.
No.
But if you've got air rushing through a tunnel, it's going to take moisture from along the edges where it's doing important work and transport it deeper into the tunnel. Now, I've got an irrigation system set up to deliver moisture, but it's not really strong enough to get the moisture on everything while the air is rushing through it. The air rushes through, it evaporates everything, and the moisture just, I can't irrigate it fast enough and I can't get the moisture out onto the middle of the webbing. So it dries out. If that dries out, it's all over. Like it all crumbles and it's a
huge
problem.
You can't stop the bellows. Like you can't say, stop the bellows for a minute and like spray water on everything and then, okay, start the bellows and start again.
Jesus Christ, Greg. Wow. Where were you when I was trying to solve this problem?
Right. Okay. Wow. Sure. I thought I was being a smart ass, but okay, fine. Yay, me.
No. We need to shut down this tunnel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But
those bellows do need to go.
Right. Okay.
So what do I need, Gregoire?
Second
tunnel. A backup tunnel.
Okay.
That way I can cycle up the second tunnel and shut down the first one for maintenance. Then I can fill the maintenance tunnel with a sprinkler system and not have to worry about blocking off airflow because it's going through the second tunnel.
Got it, got it. Okay, yep.
And these tunnel can both B. feed into the same set of bellows just through two different vents.
Ah, okay, yep. Anyway,
now, this idea was one inspired by an email from one of the many dozens of Gronyers who listened to the podcast. She mentioned the nasal cycle, where one nostril closes up with erectile tissue and the other nostril opens up to allow air passage. This usually occurs every 2.5 hours or so, but it's dependent on the individual.
Yep.
Gronya's nose switches back and forth every 10 minutes or so, so she's especially sensitive to it. Her nose is protecting her from drying out and, as a side effect, from getting a good night's sleep. I don't know, but maybe a dehumidifier would help her, because then her nose wouldn't, like, if the air is moist, then maybe her nose won't need to, like, switch back and forth.
Well, separately. A dehumidifier, you want a humidifier.
No, you want a you're right, a humidifier, a wetting.
A wetting, yeah.
A dehumidifier.
Excellent. Yes,
something
yes,
that right. undehumidifies
an undehumidifier, yeah. Yes, yeah. Got it. I have heard that thing. I've tried the nose thing. It took me much longer than I probably should admit that you were talking about lungs and the nose. I did not work out what you were talking about until much later in the conversation. I'm just going to say that now. And I blame the Easter chocolate. Anyway, but I've done the
thing.
Yeah,
not me being extra esoteric or anything.
No, of course not. Touching my nose and then realizing, I remember working it out and then going, oh, I just want those passing things. Oh, my nose is blocked. Oh, it's not blocked anymore later on. And that's great. And then I heard about it that they close, but I never knew there was a time period. I just thought it was random. I didn't know why it was doing it. It was just like sometimes you breathe through one, sometimes you breathe through the other. That's really cool.
Hmm. And because they act as filters, they need the same type of maintenance as my tunnel does.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I had to do, is I had to add a second tunnel so I can keep my bellows moist and clean.
Wait, you're not talking about your lungs then? I thought we were talking about lungs here.
Oh, that's just the inspiration for my amazing solve. Please don't ask about the acid. And we are always interested in the behaviour of erectile tissue on Smart Enough. So if you've got any well-illustrated content, please do send it to greg@smartenough.org.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. How dare you? Stop it. How dare you? Since the last podcast, something really interesting happened to me. It made me want to look into why it happened, because it's never happened before. Long story short, I collapsed at work. I just totally and utterly lost consciousness at work. I was at work and
that's called falling asleep. Yeah, if your job is, I know your job is dull.
I've had moments where I was definitely yawning, but that wasn't, no, unfortunately not. Yes, I collapsed at work. And what more interesting and a bit scary was I collapsed at work twice within 15, 20 minutes. So
I just don't get back up.
Yeah.
That solves that problem.
Sleep for 8 hours. And yes, when I did tell Dan this, gentle listener, Dan being the caring and lovely man that he is, I've known many years, went, it's probably just your body trying to point out that that's what sleep is and you need more sleep, which is very true. I don't sleep well.
But so, yeah, it's like, this is how you do it, champ.
Yeah,
you gotta, that's right. Like, it's easy, like this.
It's easy.
Pow.
Yeah, lie down. Go like, conscious.
He's gotten up again. He got straight back up as soon as, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Bring him down.
Do it again. Do it again. Just trip the breaker again.
That's right. See if he gets the hint.
For context for the audience, like, you mentioned this and said, I just didn't want anyone making a big deal about it. So I was like, oh, so I won't make a big deal about it. I thought, oh, cranky, yo, shit, dog. You know, what if it might be cancer or a brain tumor? Yeah. That you didn't want that.
No, I didn't.
So
no.
I listened to you.
I know. Thank you. I appreciate that. I just thought it was fun. I thought it was a funny point. I'm okay. Yeah. Just so listeners know, before we go any further, I am totally fine. Everything's fine. Actually fine, not just when people go, no, I'm fine, everything's fine, please don't ask questions about the last 10 minutes of my life. Like, no one knows. Once again, human body is a great big raft of miracles and mysteries that really doctors just do their best. I have a lot of respect for doctors, but also sometimes, literally, like this time, they go, we don't know. It's
sometimes not a brain tumor. Sometimes people lie down.
Yeah, and it's not. Yeah, sometimes people lie down, and it's not your heart. You're okay, champ. Okay, cool. But I wanted to look into this because I wanted to run through exactly what happened, and then run through what was happening internally to me, because that's what I was interested after the fact. Mm-hmm. Well, after the fact, it's what's called a vasovagal syncope. If you ever get vasovagal syncope, which is what I was told I had, but when I looked it up, well, I kind of already knew, but I quickly checked. It just means you fainted, and it's not really what happened. It's more of an effect of what happened, if you know what I mean. It's a symptom, not a actual diagnosis of.
Did someone tell you something shocking just before this happened?
Well, that was a thing I was trying to work out.
Mr. Like, Darcy has married. No,
a common woman, and that was the whole thing about triggers. They did ask the doctor to ask me lots of questions about. Do you have a problem with blood? Absolutely not. Did anyone leap out and scream?
The opposite.
There wasn't enough blood in my vicinity outside of my body covering my vision. Did anyone yell out, boo? Did you get a scary thing? Well, no, nothing. And it's never happened before. No, there was no trigger. That was the interesting part for me. And I have theories, which I won't go into now, about what to set this off. I have some ideas now, but they're not medical ideas. So, you know, who knows?
Ghosts. I think it could be stomach ghost.
Who knows? So context, I was heading out, thank God not driving. I was passenger seat of a car heading to a school, working with a colleague, and we're having a lovely conversation about pedagogy of education, really exciting stuff. So you can't even say it was that. I was far too excited by that because I was interested, but not that interested.
Sucks to be the person driving, listening to this podcast. Like, they're doing their best to discuss pedagogy with you, and you're like, it's not enough to make me pass out.
No, no. No, I think that person would be very happy to know they didn't pass. They didn't. We'll get to that. So we're driving along with my colleague. We're having a conversation about what we're going to do and like strategies for future stuff. It was interesting. It wasn't so exciting. I was going to pass out from it. But then I started to get nauseous. It's about 20 minutes down the road. And sometimes I do get a bit car sick. It's happened in my past. And I know just to look out the window more and to focus on the level horizon and put a bit of air on my face. It's going to be fine. Just a wave of nausea. Mm. And the wave of nausea came.
I always find just a little bit of chloroform on a rag. Just breathe in and out through that to help me get over the car.
Maybe that's what she did to me. Maybe I do remember her. No, I shouldn't say that. Not at all. I got nauseous, but not badly nauseous. And I put the air. We're still having the conversation. And then you have that thing where you're like, oh, I don't feel well, but not super well, not super bad. I'm sure this too will pass. And then it didn't. It started to get worse. But you're in someone's car and you don't know what to do. We're on a highway, so it's not easy to pull over. And I'm like, oh, no, this nausea is getting worse. Hang on a minute. And we're still chatting. Later on, my colleague did say, I did notice you getting a bit pale. Like you were getting a bit pale at that point, but I don't knew that at the time. And then I went, oh no, like a massive wave of nausea. And I went, we need to pull the car over as soon as you can. Very calmly. I said very calmly, hey, blah, you need to pull the car over. I'm very sorry. I'm about to be sick in your car. I'm really sorry. Some part of my British heritage kicked in saying, very sorry. I'm about to vomit in your car. I was like more worried by that than, you know, like the horror of having to befoul someone's car.
How embarrassing. I'm having a medical event.
It is. And it was. It really, really was. And I leant forwards I don't feel well. And then I don't have, then that's when I don't remember fainting, but that's when I fainted. And
if
I went down.
If you remember fainting, you haven't really fainted.
Well, before I get into the medical stuff, here's the interesting point. When I went down that time, I wouldn't say there's a perfect line, but I have very strong memories of being conscious whilst fainted. That sounds really weird.
Dark, but like a bright light in the distance.
No, nothing that exciting.
And it got closer and closer.
And all I heard was, shut the door. Don't let him in. Oh, don't let him. He said he was going to punch me in the clang. Anyway, I have strong memories of the conversation we were having.
Did you hear what he said about sin on that podcast?
So I have a strong memory of the thing we were talking about, the strategy. My brain continued to outline the 6-monthly strategy. And I have a very strong memory of that. So it was like all the stuff I've been talking about, I was aware that I was like putting all the stuff together. And then I had a very strong experience of, why can't I see? I have a really, why can't, not scared, just why can't I see? My brain, obviously, it's my conscious mind, which had been shut down, but some part of me was still awake and making conscious thought, was like, where's the vision feed gone? And then I woke up again. So I've jumped ahead slightly. So I want to talk about the trigger happened. So according to this, the trigger, whatever the trigger was, don't know what it is, it happened somewhere. And my body set up an alarm reaction. So the trigger action involves the nervous system. So the panic button is pressed on my body and it's like, okay, get ready to fight or flight, baby. Fight or flight, let's go. So it's like, it technically should ramp everything up. Your heart rate increases and your blood pressure goes up and you're ready to punch or run away, basically. It's like, if that's your thing. But because it intersected with my vagus nerve, which is connects your brain to all your organs. My vagus nerve at this point is called the vagal response. So that's part of what's called the parasympathetic nervous system. It went, hang on. No. We're not being attacked. We're sitting in a car or whatever. It's just, I don't know how it knew, but it went, no. And it sent out a calm the freak down, body. This is, whoa. We are well overreacting to this. Everyone calm the F down right now. Calm down. And the vagus nerve wins. And it sent a message to my heart to calm the freak down. And my heart, which wasn't racing at this point, hadn't had time, goes, okay. So it went lower. My heart rate dropped through the floor and my blood pressure and the vagus nerve told everything else, look, stop constricting all those veins, which weren't being constricted. So my body opened up all its vasodilated. So all my legs opened up, all the veins, all the blood rushes to my legs. And
so you basically became a jellyfish.
Basically. Because I was sitting down, I was reading because I was sitting down, it probably took a bit longer because you're standing up, it happens much faster. Mm-hmm. Sitting down, you haven't got the same issues. So now the blood is going into my feet, but not coming back because the body's not pumping it back to the brain faster. So the vagus nerve's gone, everyone calm down, brain, we're doing really well. Wait, hang on a minute. And the brain's like, hi, I'm the brain. Where's all the blood? I need a lot of blood and a lot of oxygen.
A lot of blood's gone missing, Bruce. A lot of blood.
Yeah.
Big problem in accounting.
And it's like, hey, when you told everyone to calm down, like how calm? Because dead's calm and we're going that way fast.
They're real calm, boss. They're real calm. I settled everything down. I did a great job, boss.
Yes. And the brain's like,
yeah, where is everyone?
And so the brain gets less blood and the brain's like, help, 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 help. And the only thing it can do, because the vagus nerve is really just gone, I said, calm down, everyone, and it's not going to start up. And the brain goes, we've got to end this now because this is going to end with death. So it knocks you out. It just goes, it's not like the brain has gone, I have got no oxygen and therefore I stop working. It's more complicated than that. It's like, put him on the floor immediately. Get him down, get him low, get his head at the same height as the heart so we don't have to pump this nonsense around anymore. The blood will flow where it needs to go. Put him on the goddamn ground right now. And it does. It just, you pass out, right? Now, I couldn't because I was, it had a seatbelt. Seatbelts kill. No, I shouldn't. That's not true. Seatbelts are great. But I didn't, the doctor
just said, just doing this stuff. I wouldn't have this problem if I was in a fruit bat.
Absolutely. Not many animals faint and,
goats do infamously,
but different reason. It's not a vasovagal syncope. It's a different sort of fainting. This is very much based on the fact that we are an upright ape with our brains higher than our hearts. Most animals have on the same level. You don't get the same level of blood issues.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's a whole thing. This is a mistake that happens that it's just a misalignment of what was meant to happen. And so you get this fainting situation. I faint. I go down like a sack of crap and I'm down for a minute or so. So long, but not really long. Like the longer it is, it gets scarier for the, you know, and the brain is already kicking in and going, all right, everyone stop listening to the vagus nerve. It's an idiot. Heart, get your shit together. Pump, you son of a bitch. Pump. And everything just goes berserk. It basically, your blood pressure has to come back up and your heart pumps like crazy because it's like, I'm dying. Help me. Your brain is like doing a thing. So even when I'm unconscious, that the blood is increasing, everything's coming back and I come back to consciousness. I was aware that I'd passed out. I actually said to my colleague, did I just pass out? She said later on in a disturbingly reasonable voice, did I just pass out? Yes, Greg, you just passed out.
Excuse me. Yes. Take a moment of your time. And she was lose consciousness. Pass off into the void.
So she was desperately still trying to pull over the car. We come off the highway at that point, thank goodness, in a safe way. We pulled over into a bus stop. And I remember saying to her, we can't stop here. It's a bus stop. The buses will get really upset. She's like, don't care, get out of my car. No, she didn't. She was very kind. And I climbed out and I sat in the grass and then my brain went, lie down. And so it was very strong and I lay down, but I was constantly talking to her. She was calling the ambulances and not ambulance at that point. Ambulance didn't get called at that point because I said, don't call an ambulance. I'm fine. But I was talking to her the whole time.
People whose brain keep telling them to lie down often are not in the best position to make that call.
No. But I was very aware that I had to keep talking to her because I know
could
that
could I just climb under someone's house into the very back dark corner, please? I'd be fine with that.
I'd be fine. Just let me die. Let me die there. Thanks. I won't smell too much. But I was talking to her the whole time. I was very conscious of talking to her because I didn't want to think that I was dead or that I had brain damage or something. So I was very much
that would
like,
be very embarrassing for you.
No, not
to
embarrassing.
Die.
I was my colleague was very freaked out. Like I was very, and I was concerned for her. I wanted her to know that I was okay. So I was like running a conversation with her. Like, I'm okay. You know, yes, this is weird, but I'm. And
so
I was
pedagogy,
sweating,
huh?
I was sweating. I've never sweated like. I was looking at my hands and they were white, like sheet white. So I was like, oh, okay. And I was sweating like just rivulets off my body. It's just, it was incredibly, like every part of me was sweating like I'd gone for a run in a summer's day. Crazy. And I lay down for about a minute and then I didn't want to lie down anymore. I sat back up and my colleague had come back. I didn't want an ambulance and I was feeling a lot better. And over the next 10 minutes, there were waves of nausea, but it was getting better and better and better.
Mm.
I talked to my boss. My boss called me. It was like, are you okay? Obviously. In fact, I got a phone call because I didn't know that my colleague had phoned my boss. And then my boss, I was asked my boss and I go pick up the phone straight away. It's funny how quickly we respond to phones. And I went, I'm not dead. Just kind of weirdly yelled it at the phone and then went, oh, do you know what's going on? That's a very weird thing for me to yell at you. She's like, yes, Greg, I'm aware of what's going on. I'm glad you're not dead. You can just hear it in her voice where she's like, ah, oh, this guy. Like, it's like dealing with a child.
Maybe she got a monkey's paw. It's like, I wish he'd shut up for a bit. And a monkey's claw comes down and something's like, bonk.
Yeah. Well, she obviously used it twice. So, spoilers, she must have used it twice.
She's got one more to go.
Yeah. So she,
Wait a second. Monkey's paws have four fingers. There must be four wishes on. Oh, because I've only known it from The Simpsons. That's why I think there's three.
Yes, of course. Yes. So no, I didn't want the ambulance and I honestly thought I was feeling a lot better. I really was like, no, like, and I said, and she's like, oh, I feel uncomfortable with it. I went, if it happens again, I promise an ambulance will be called. Anyway, after about 10 minutes, I'm feeling a lot better and I'm going to get driven home by my colleague. Like, I'm going to go home. And I said, I'm going to go to a GP. I'm like doing it all properly. I don't want to go to a hospital and just sit in a hospital, right? Get in the car, 5 minutes down the road, suddenly it just hits me again. Unlike last time, I don't get the warning. I just get, my brain's like, no, get to the floor. And I had time to go, it's happening again. And I lost consciousness again. It was super fast. For the first time, it was like a long process of nausea. Second time, my body was like, we are not playing around. And it put me out again for a minute. This time I woke up on the grass. My colleague told me that when she pulled over very quickly, I climbed out of the car myself and then staggered to the grass and fell over, like collapsed heavily. But I don't remember that. Some part of my body, I love the fact that some part of my body's like, run. Get to the grass, get to the trees. Like, I don't know. There's a very safety mechanism that's like climb, fight, bite.
Initiate protocol salvage. Dun, 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 yeah. Yeah.
And it's, oh no, we've all fallen over. Long story short on that one, I was okay. I didn't, you know, I was very tired the second time. Absolutely zonked. Like I'd run a marathon. I was exhausted. I admit that. Ambulances were called, but my colleague said, I'm calling an ambulance. I went, that's probably for the best. Ambulance came. They were really nice and they looked after me and they took me to a hospital. There was a wait, like it took 20 minutes to get to the hospital. I had to wait in line to get into the hospital for, you know, about 20 minutes and that's okay. That's not too bad. And the ambulance people with me the whole time, like chatting to me, making sure I was okay. Nice guy. I got sent to triage where I had to wait for about an hour, which is not great, but not awful. And then I got into a waiting area, not triage, sorry, a waiting area. And a nurse came to go, are you dying? Like, no, you're not dying. Okay, we'll get to you very soon. Ambulance guy stayed with me the whole time. I was like, you don't need to be here. He's like, I kind of do legally. Like, okay, cool.
All right. He's got a hand off.
Yeah. And I was really impressed by that because I was not really.
You were under
exhausted.
The impression that they just drive up and just tip the back up and slide
really
the patient
did.
Out
yes.
into
yes.
a into a big concrete thing. And then eventually a nurse turns up and is like, ah, oh, you need a, we'll get you in here.
Yeah. That was really cool. And I wasn't aware
like
of that.
Like they're Uber drivers.
Yeah, can't you? I was not aware of that hour. I was not going unconscious. I was sleeping. Like, I was just like in that twilight state. I was so tired. And then I got to see a triage and they did lots of tests on me and it was fine. And then in the end, they released me about 5 hours later because they put me up to heart monitors and did blood tests and brain tests and beyond all the normal bullshit that's happening with my body. It was all fine. No idea. No one has any clue why it happens and it's never happened again. And they're like, cool. If it happens again, we'd like to know about it. I've been seeing GPs. They're like, it's all fine. So that was my experience of fainting and what the body does. My last point of this is, guess how much it cost me out of my pocket to be picked up by an ambulance, taken to a hospital, to be seen by a paramedic, two nurses and a doctor and stay for 5 hours and get released.
Gosh, I mean, you're already dealing with five professionals.
Yes, absolutely.
Dealing with like an hour, at least, like, if you call that a plumber, that's going to be like $150 an hour.
I had 7 hours, at least 7 hours from being picked up by the ambulance to being released by the hospital. Yeah. At least seven. Closer to eight, actually.
So you're looking at it at like $3,000 just for the service.
Sure.
And then you've got like having the ambulance on call and the infrastructure of that and the hospital and stuff. I mean, you're looking at tens of thousands of dollars, surely. Yeah.
Absolutely. It costs exactly $0.
$0?
$0.
Well, who's paying for that?
Well, we are, of course.
I am.
Taxpayers.
You're stealing my money.
So we live in a system in Australia where there is, you know, universal healthcare. Does it have problems? Yes, of course it has problems. But I just want to reiterate how wonderful it was that I don't have to worry about paying. Until quite recently, you did have to pay for ambulances and things, or get insurance, like it was part of a thing. But that's all paid out of different bills now, like housing, electricity, or is it water?
Other states in Australia, you still have to pay for ambulance stuff.
Yes, so it's not across Queensland.
Here we pay an ambulance levy or something. And
yes,
so
like 100, yeah.
You don't need to be like, don't call an ambulance because I can't afford it.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Because that kills people.
Yes, exactly.
Like, if you get an ambulance out, they can save you really quickly, and it doesn't cost as much to keep you alive.
Yeah. I just want to point that out, how good that system is, and how wonderful everyone was looking after me and took it seriously. And there were delays, but also people who were much more injured than I was were going past me, and that's how it should be. Like, no one was that super worried I was dropping dead right then and there, because the paramedics put ECGs, all the sticky things on me, right? They were monitoring my heart whilst I was there. So don't malign universal healthcare systems. Pay your taxes. It kept your good old friend Gregoire going, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much, everyone in Australia.
You're welcome. Enjoy my money.
See, animals don't faint. Not the same reason they faint. Some horses kind of do, and cats and dogs kind of can, but it's not the same. It's a bit different. And goats, that sort of stuff. And birds, some birds can, but it's not the same. It's our heads are above our hearts. That's a big problem. It's almost like it was stupidly designed. That's why I didn't get to see the light, by the way.
Yeah. Got problems with the design spec.
Yep.
Talking to God and going, you know what I was in there? You know what you put me in?
Yeah.
The fucking vocal cords wrap around the bottom of the body. What the fuck is that all about?
Yeah, absolutely do. Yeah, it's so silly. Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. You're a quadruped that stopped being a quadruped and has done its level best to overcome the issues of a quadruped not being a quadruped anymore. But all your hip issues and all your feet issues and all your blood pressure issues all come from being a quadruped that is too good to quadruped.
Yeah. So. And God's like, wait, you did what with your knees?
Yes.
You tried to put what load on that? What did you do? What have you been doing down there?
Hey, guys, I built you to hang from your arms some trees. No load on the legs at all. What are you idiots doing? They weren't designed for load bearing.
Did you not
hang
read
from your
the
shoulders.
Manual?
Yeah, you meant to be in trees.
This is outside the scope of what you were supposed to be doing.
Yeah. We're not claiming it's on warranty. Not my fault, mate. You did home renovations without getting permits? Bullshit to you. I like God as an angry tradie.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's supposed to be like that, mate. Yeah. You've got to accept there's a certain tolerance for any of these builds.
The one I'd be asking is, so you put the waste disposal system next to the reproductive system. In fact, not just next to, but all part of the same bit.
Well, look, that's not my fault. Like, I came in and this architecture was already there. So I can't, Like, I mean, you've got load-bearing legs there and you can't sort of move them apart or anything.
Human bodies are a goddamn mess. They're such a mess.
I'm just trying to visualize God's ute. That sounds like a wet, like, it sounds like a country song.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it contains all the tools that have ever been invented. It's got a no fear sticker on the back.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. My son started a religion or something. would God have Tobol testicles on the back of the ute? I don't know. Is that the level God would go to? Is he impressed by testicles?
I don't know. His My Family stickers would just be like billions of My Family stickers, little tiny.
Or it's just him.
It's a very curious sticker, which is, it's kind of three people, but also kind of just one person. It's like a very difficult sticker to grasp.
Yeah. Yeah. One of them seems like they're dressed in a sheet. Anyway. Happy Easter, everyone.
You may remember, Gregoire, a long time ago you sent me back to Cordova 999 AD in our time machine.
Of course.
Where I invented the photocopier using a pinhole camera and leaves.
Yes, yes, I do.
That's the kind of podcast you're listening to.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back and find it. It's worth listening to.
So the Frog Princess loves messing around with alternative photography, and she's been experimenting with something called the anthotype process.
Ooh.
This involves crushing flower petals and mixing them with water or alcohol to form an emulsion. You can then paint this onto a sheet of paper, let it dry in the dark, put your mask over it and then a sheet of glass. Then you put that in the sun, and whenever the sun hits it, it bleaches the emulsion but leaves everything under the mask. So once that's done, you can store it in the dark and take it out to look at it. Or you can take a picture of it with your phone,
right?
Which kind of defeats the purpose. But it does take weeks or months for this to occur.
Wow.
I was trying to put prints directly onto leaves, but this is another way where with a bit more control, where you can paint like a very simple emulsion. You don't need to deal with any of that chemistry stuff.
Could you imagine trying to hold a smile for months? You're standing there going, oh. And they're like, I think someone closed their eyes. I have to do it again. Like, God damn it.
Well, you could speed this up by using a brighter sun. Okay. In fact, the brightest object that we know of is a quasar at the center of another galaxy, J0529-4351, or as I like to call it, J0529-3051. I couldn't think of a nickname. But if we could hold this anthotype up to the quasar, it would go much faster with no side effects that I can think of.
When you say hold up to the quasar, you mean it's at 1 AU from the quasar, as in the same distance we have from the sun. Yeah, okay, got it. Okay, yeah. We can hold up to the quasar now, it just wouldn't do anything.
Too far away.
Yeah, too far away. Okay, right. Yeah. So what we're saying is get the Earth.
I don't know how many kilogram blocks away that is, but.
So, yeah, you don't. Yeah, right, okay, got it. That would be.
Toasty?
I don't think you'd even get there. I feel the radiation would tear everything apart well before you got close to it. I'm absolutely, yeah. 1 AU out from a actively feeding supermassive black hole. We're assuming from the event horizon here, not from the center of it.
That doesn't actually make a lot of sense. Like 1 AU doesn't even mean anything at the inside of past the
horizon. 1 AU, that would be inside the supermassive black hole. A supermassive black hole is like the one at the center of our galaxy. Oh, no, wait, is one at the center of our galaxy? It almost goes out to like Neptune's orbit, something like that. So most of the solar system is like the black hole, if you want to think of it that way, or the event horizon itself. Anyway, the answer is you couldn't get that close. But yes, from the event horizon, holy crap. Yeah, that would be bad goddamn news.
Well, you got to suffer for your art, Gregoire.
And so does everyone else.
My art's not that bad, is it? Welcome to the Walk of Shame, where we make mistakes and you, the wonderful listeners who are carefully listening, tell us where we've gone wrong. Greg, do you have a Walk of Shame for me this week?
I do. In fact, I have two of them today. Two of them. Excellent.
Great.
One is from
Set
Scott.
Set me straight, baby.
In episode 207, Dan asserted that Han Solo got his distance mixed up with his time in relation to did the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs. Everyone knows Star Trek. Star
now,
Trek? Star
a parsec Wars? Is a distance, right?
Parsec is just over 3 light years, so yes. This has been a thing, a long-running problem with Star Wars in the fact that Han Solo uses the term, he did the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs. Now, let's be honest, but this is not what Scott wrote, our listener Scott, so I'm sorry, Scott, I'm already ruining what you said. Let's be honest, George Lucas didn't know what a parsec was. It sounded like a spacey term. He didn't understand the internet was going to become a thing and pedantic nerds would work it out. It's an error in the movie. I'm willing to bet he should have said
space minutes.
He should have said
I did the Kessel Run in under 9 space minutes.
Exactly. Then it wouldn't be a problem. So I will now go on, though, and say what Scott said about it. In this cinematic presentation, Solo, a Star Wars story, we got to see the said Kessel Run. We see Han Solo take a shortcut through the very dangerous Akadaka Maelstrom. That's not what it is, but I don't know. I'm not going to pronounce that. So it's, you've been thunderstruck. Anyway, sorry. He didn't write that. That's just me editorializing.
Right.
So he basically took it through the Akadesi Maelstrom, I think it's called. There's a shortcut of distance and coincidentally, therefore time, thereby under 12 parsecs. So he did the Kessel Run under 12 parsecs. Scott goes on to say, making Dan a scruffy looking nerve herder.
I see. So that's kind of like doing, like, I did the Olympic 1200 meters in under 300 meters because I just ran across the pitch.
Yes, yes, yes,
that's,
it is.
That's what that's saying.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well.
He managed to, I guess, I have seen that movie for my sins. I don't really remember it. What they're trying to imply is he's such a great navigator and risk taker. He managed to find a shorter way that no one else could do or would be stupid enough to do without the Millennium Falcon. And there was a giant squid in space that was angry about stuff. Right. I remember that, but I don't know
the Kessel Run, the one that goes all the way around the outside of that giant squid. I did it in 12 parsecs. It's like, well, you must have gone past the giant squid. It's like, yes. It's like, just say that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yes.
I did the Kessel Run and I didn't take I took the shortcut through the giant squid.
Yeah,
like literally through the whole squid. It is massive. I did not touch the sides on the way through.
I ran past the giant squid. My God, you should be dead. You will find that 85% of people die instantly when going past the giant squid. But I rolled 15% on my save and therefore made it in under 12 parsecs. You should be dead. We should definitely put up some warning signs about what happens if some children went past that giant squid. Anyway, yes. So, Scott, you are correct. Technically correct, the best sort of correct, I think. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott. Doesn't feel like the worst retcon of all time.
Not from Scott. We're not blaming Scott for that.
No.
Whoever wrote the script.
I used to be so cranky at George Lucas for just messing up the Star Wars universe. All of his re-edits and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And him futzing around and then the prequels and stuff. And I'm like, this guy's a useless human being. And then he took a whole bunch of his money and there were a bunch of rich people and they're like, not in my backyard. And he's like, I'm going to put a whole bunch of like really cheap housing for people in your backyard.
Yeah.
And ever since I'm like, you know what, George Lucas, you make whatever creative decisions you want. If you're going to make this cool decision like that in real life, then you do it, baby.
I'm sorry. If someone came to me and said, hey, Greg, well, this cool thing you made, I want to give you $2 billion for it. I'd be like, that's a dumb amount of money. Like it doesn't even make sense. Of course you just say, sure, bye. And then you can just give billions or hundreds of millions away to help people and it doesn't affect you because you've still got billions of dollars.
Yeah, that's the thing with someone with $20 billion who gives away $19 billion is they've still got $1 billion.
And that $1 billion will generate a lot more billions of dollars over time. Anyway, it's billions.
The whole system's broken.
Whole system's broken. And so is Star Wars, but that's fine. Thank you, everyone. It's fine. It's fine.
You told me that you can check whether an egg is hard-boiled or raw by spinning it and stopping it and checking to see if its internals keep spinning.
Yes, yes.
You also said it was a myth that putting an egg in water and checking to see if it floats could detect whether it's hard-boiled or raw.
Right, yes.
Yeah. It's not a myth.
What?
That is to say, that's not the myth.
Oh, okay.
You conflated two egg-checking concepts.
Oh.
The myth is that putting an egg in water and seeing if it floats is a way to check not that the egg is boiled, but whether the egg is fresh or not.
Oh.
This, okay. too, is not a myth.
Right.
It's a real thing.
Huh.
Eggshells are permeable. Air can get in. That's how the chicken breeds.
Mm.
Moisture can get out. So, a fresh egg is full of delicious goo, but an old egg has had some of its goo evaporate and been replaced with air. Meaning, if you put an egg in a bowl of water, a fresh egg will lie on the bottom, but an older egg will stand on its end as the bubble inside pulls the egg upward. If the egg floats on the surface, it's probably too old to eat.
Right. What happens if it floats out of the bowl and it leaves the window?
That bird has learned to fly.
Inside
the egg.
I'm out.
It is piloting the device. It's just wings on either side of this egg. Yeah. So a big thank you to the Frog Princess for putting me on the path to this.
Oh, exactly. So not eggs, earth. Thank you very much, French.
Oof.
Oof. Oof. Ah, crap.
Oof. Hey. O-E-Oof.
O-E-U-F?
O-E-U-F, I think, yeah.
Okay, there you go. This is from listener Andy in episode 208 at 11 minutes and 22 seconds. Ah, oh, thank you, Andy. I love it. Dan says, there's no lava down there whilst discussing the Mariana Trench. Much of the world's volcanic activity happens beneath the waves, and in fact, the largest of recent history happened undersea and is now known to be much bigger than previous Walks of Shame's guest volcano, Mount Tombura. With really wonderful links to it. As well as this, the Mariana Trench is formed in an ocean subduction zone. It's quite volcanic with an event happening as recently as 2015, leaving fresh lava observable on the bottom of the ocean. It's not the deepest part of the trench, but it is in the trench. So yes, you can get lava down there in the Mariana Trench. So that's I added that bit in. That's my bit. But it ends with a really backwards compliment or backwards comment to me. I become so accustomed to correcting you, Gregoire. Here, I almost sent this to Dan.
I'm annoyed by that, Walker Shane, because I said there's no lava down there. And like what this was not a mistake.
Oh.
It was a joke that did not land at all. Like, I know there's all that lava down there. I've seen Pacific Rim. like that's where all the lava is. It can't, like, there's all these lava votes. So I think, oh, yeah, that's a very common. Everyone knows that that's where all the lava is. So I'll make a joke about how there's no lava under there because it's water, because the water would put it out.
Got
you
it.
See? So the that joke. Was my joke. It died in the asshole.
What's weird about this, though, Dan, is... this would make sense to me if I edited the podcast, but you edit the podcast. So you knowingly put in a mistake that you knew was a bad joke that didn't land and you kept it in the podcast.
Well, I didn't think anyone would be so pedantic as to bring it up. But unfortunately, that's exactly how we've trained our audience to be.
For 12 years, we've tried very hard to get our listeners to be that pedantic and rewarded them at every opportunity. Yeah. Strange.
Sorry.
But thank you.
I'm going to make a walk of shame for assuming that no one would pull me up on that.
Actually, for me, fine. I will accept your non-walk of shame for – you won't walk in a shameful way for the science.
Yep.
But I really think you need to walk in a shameful way for the terribly atrocious joke.
Yeah. All right. I'll do that.
All right. Good. So, the universe is balanced,
actually,
is restored.
No, wait. It's not right, a bad joke. Like, the notion that water could put out lava is like, and that's why it doesn't exist under the sea, is kind of funny. Like, it's a misunderstanding, it's an intentional misunderstanding about how lava works. You know right. what? Fine.
Listeners, write in and tell us. Is it funny? I'm not making any comments here.
You know what? I'm just going to walk the walk. This is not good. Life is too short. God. If you hear Greg make a mistake, do send an email to dan@smartenough.org.
And occasionally, if Dan makes a mistake or talks about something scientific for once, then send the errors to greg@smartenough.org.
What? Shots fired?
That was a mean way of saying I have a habit of pulling things from the dim resources of my mind, and I always know them 70% of the time. And then, yeah, other 30% is just shocking.
Whatever gets you to sleep at night. Well, whatever knocks you out.
That was the trigger event. Down I go.
You have been listening to Dan at smartenough.org.
And Greg at smartenough.org.
You can get along to smartenough.org and join in the conversation with the comments there. Yeah. You can press any of the clicky buttons. Obviously, yep. If you're not signed up to some sort of feed and you want to hear and find out when every episode comes out, click on the subscribe button.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing, but I guess there's some people who just are like, I'll just listen to this one episode.
Yeah, cool.
And I love it, but I'm not going to come back to the website.
They have to come crawling back to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's not healthy. That's a very unhealthy relationship to have.
So, and, you know, you can do it on all sorts of devices. There's Apple Podcasts, there's RSS, there's Skitch to Ollie 360. I don't know.
Are you okay? Are you had a stroke? What's wrong?
I seem to have. If you would like to support the podcast, you can drop some money in the tip jar. You can buy some shirt.
On the shirt front, and it sounds weird, but
that's where the design is on the shirt front.
Yes, that's it. If you bought one, because some people have been buying them, which is lovely and great. Thank you. It's really cool. I mean, both types of shirts, like the logo and the picture. If you don't feel weird about it, send us a photo. That's not weird. I'm not being weird about this. I'm just interested. Yeah, I'm interested in seeing it in the wild because people have in the past. I'm
a picture of your erectile tissue and wearing the shirt to Greg at smartenough.org.
I would love to see our shirt out in the wild somewhere in the world. That just amazes me when people go, I was here doing a cool thing. If you'd like to do that, send it to us. That'd be lovely. You don't have to. It's all fine.
And if you take that shirt off, same deal applies.
Stop it.
Greg@smartenough.org. No. So a big thank you to our second tier patrons, Matthew Toy, Liz Y, A.B. Greenbury, Ivan, Andrew Potts, Britta Rogowski, Andrew Whitehurst, Matt Ewers, Ilana Mitchell, Gronje Maguire, Andrew Trousdale, Steve Stewart, Lindsay Jenkinson, and Mariana Scott. Thank you all so much for being second tier patrons on the Patreon patron page.
Amazing.
And there is, of course, the third tier patrons, and they get abused by me.
Yay.
The Brisbane to Gladstone boat race is at the end of this month. So these insults are about sailing. Right. So to these tier three patrons who are being abused for their generous donation, Mikhail Kidar, I do not like the cut of your jib. Steve Eichenhout, you are the head of the class.
Oh. Wait.
Because it's on a boat.
What?
Because it's on a boat. The head would be...
Oh, I see. Oh, it's a toilet joke.
Toilet joke.
Ah, very good. Okay. Excellent.
And finally, Tom Seary, you smell like a crosswind.
How strange.
Big thank you to Al Batson, Eric Wilson, Maudyn O'Hare, Scott Driscoll, Michael Barnes, Joey Wesley, you float my boat.
No, please send a photo of that to dan@smartenough.org.
A floated boat. And as we always like to say,
I saw God's youth on the back roads of my life.
Very well-known country song.
It is now. I was going to do one about bodies in space and what would happen to a body, like if someone dies in space and then has to be ejected.
Well, a body wouldn't cool down that fast in space, would it? Because it's got to radiate its heat. It can't.
You can't get convection. It would still, you still cool down pretty fast because it's pretty cold on one side. It depends on whether you're in sunlight or not, I guess. But yeah.
Your thermal inertia would, like, you're not going to have that temperature wicked away by cold air.
No, that's true. Yeah,
you can only radiate that heat.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
If you tried to hold your breath, you'd pop, or at least the pressure would draw the air out of you.
I'm talking more of a corpse, like post dead person, like as in you've died and now you're like. So let's say on the International Space Station, if someone dies, do they keep them? And they can keep the body in for a couple of days and then send it back to Earth, but. if in the future, if someone's like outgoing to Mars and something goes on, you can't have a smelly body on the space station. You got to get rid of it. So, you know, launch it into space. And but what happens to it then? Like, don't put it in a space suit because that's a waste of a space suit. Just why do it? You know, just push it out. And then what happens to the body at that point? Yeah. That
was you get desiccated?
Yeah.
With the moisture. That's the first thing, wouldn't it? And boil off.
Yes. And all your blood vessels on the surface would burst. Still, even if you were dead, because the blood in it would turn to vapor, anything close to the surface.
Yeah.
So you get lots of bruising and that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's interesting, actually, what would happen if you were hit the first. But then of course, there's other things. Just because you're dead doesn't mean that the rest of the parts of you that live in you aren't dead.
Hmm.
And some of them will die, but a lot of them won't. And then they can still do their processes for a while anyway, for a couple of hours until the body radiates all its heat away on one side. So
would you be you'd be like a frozen mummy by the end of it?
But also heated on one side because there's no depending on where how far away from the sun, you're going to have like positive 200 degrees centigrade on one side of you and negative 200 degrees centigrade on the other side of you. So and no way of so that would be if you're rotating or something, you'd sort of,
be like a half cooked burrito.
Yeah. So if you were rotating through the axis and keeping both sides, you know, if you're doing that and you're the sun.
Oh, like a stellar hot dog warmer.
Yeah, or a rotisserie chicken.
Yep.
I mean, that would stop the body from cooling down and would allow the bacteria to do its horrible work until one of them made a terrible error and ruptured the side of you and got evacuated into space.
And that's 100% what would happen. Like, you're never going to be exactly stationary. Like, you're always going to have some spin on you. You're probably going to be spinning like a top.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, and it all depends how the whole yawing and pitching and rolling, like all three axes you'd be sort of going through. Depends how far you were thrown out. But yeah, I mean, you could be, if you were if you're going end over end like that, you're only getting sort of heated. Even then you'd be heated. No, you're right. Yeah. There's no way of not. It depends how slowly it is, I guess.
Mm.
And then bacteria eats a lot of you, but not enough of you before it dies. And then.
So you'd eventually hit a particular temperature that probably wasn't very warm.
I don't know. I think, you would be desiccated. You'd be a desiccated mummy baked, depending on how much you're rotating, how quickly, how much it freezes or bakes.
I don't think you're going to be rotating moderately fast. Like, it's not going to take you a day to rotate.
Probably. No. Well, it could be, but no, you're right. It's more likely that you're rotating. Who knows? Whether it's a couple times a second or a couple times an hour, who knows? I mean, it depends on how you're flicked as you're given. In momentum you're passed onto as you go out the window or out the airlock.
Like, it depends on how much heat is coming into the body via radiation and how much is going out of the body.
Yes, yes, that's right.
If those are in balance, then you stay the same temperature.
Yeah. And well, it's negative, like on one side, I said, it's like negative 270 or something on the 273 on one side, and the cold side, it's the cold, 270 because space has a temperature of about 3 degrees Kelvin.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 270, and you're at 200 on the other side. Yes, you're having energy imparted from the sun, but...
And it depends on how far you got to Mars.
Well, yes, and that would... Exactly, because it's inverse square. So you once you get to Mars, Mars gets about a quarter of the sunlight that we get, I think. Mm. So it's in that ballpark anyway.
And if you had dropped out the ship, they're not going to fire you. You're not going to stop. You're going to be going just slower than the ship, maybe, faster if you throw them out the front.
Well, it'd be awful.
Throw them out the front so that they're always in the view screen, just like powering on like Superman.
But even if you threw them out the side of the ship, that would be awful. If you didn't give them enough momentum, you'd really want to propel them away because you'd just be leaving the ship but moving on. You'd be watching this. If you didn't do enough, you'd be like, Jim's still out the window. He's just a bit further away. So you either want to throw them out the diagonally backwards so that they can't see them, or you want to throw them very fast out the side so that they dwindle and become too small to see. Because that'd be an awful thing to see out of a window if you have any windows to have a look at. Like a corpse of your friend, that'd be bad.
Yeah.
You want to, just because you throw it out, it's not like going to hit by wind and then it's not like you're not throwing them out of a train. There's nothing to slow them down. It's going to continue on. So yeah, you want to make sure you throw them somewhere that you can't see them, or you wrap them up and don't worry about it. Or you don't have windows and it doesn't matter.
But the thing is, how do you throw them out of the ship too? Because you don't want to use up your air. You want to put them in I'm assuming there's an airlock.
Yeah.
You put them in the airlock, you pump all the air out, they already start sizzling, and then you open up the door, and then what? You just hope that then you'd, what, steer the ship away from them?
Well, no, I guess if you're doing it that way, you'd be standing in there holding, so you'd be in the airlock with them with no air, so you're not going to get pushed out. You hang on to the edge or you clamp to the ground or whatever, and you go, and you hurl them out the door. And out they go. I mean, that's how I would do it. Or you're right though, for that sort of mission, you wouldn't use air, but maybe there's another sort of gas that you could go, we can generate, like if there's, maybe you could generate hydrogen and you could just vent that out the side and that would, go out the window, out the airlock without, give it a bit of momentum, but you would have no control over it then. It was just like, it would just head off somewhere.
Yeah. How do you get a body off your ship if you don't want to use any resources, like if you want to keep all of your...
Throw it off the ship.
Yeah. The thing is, you don't want to be out in the vacuum of space to do this. Like if you just want to put the body in the airlock...
No, but you put on a spacesuit as if you're going to do a spacewalk, and then, which I assume you'd have to be able to do to be able to fix your ship. You put your spacesuit on, you've got your friend's corpse there, which it'd be naked because you wouldn't want to throw maybe just a simple bit of clothing so that, for modesty or whatever, I don't know, for your sake, not that person's
and
sake.
And maybe there's something useful in that body. Like maybe you only want to eject part of the body.
True. Yeah, exactly. But it's going to, I mean, you could freeze it. That's the other thing. Maybe
wouldn't you hate to get to Mars and be like, oh, do you have anything like a thigh bone around?
We have to fight the Mars chimps with our thigh
bones. We threw that out. I can't believe we held onto that for so long.
But maybe it's also you just hold on to the body and you put it, you freeze it and you wrap it in a thing and then you freeze it up and it just stays there. Especially if it's in the cold of space, it's not going to. It's get pretty messy. The bacteria would have a field day. But
could you pose the body in such a way that then you opened up the thing and maybe exposed the sun to it so that when the sun hit it, it sort of cooked one side of it and sort of opened up the body so it kind of sprang itself out into space?
Mate, I don't think so. I don't think so. It's not like vampires caught in the sun bursting into flame. I don't think that's... No, I don't think that's how it works. Unless they were a vampire. And now we're in Blindsight. Yeah, now we're in Blindsight territory. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. Good that we've made a nod towards Blindsight, not actually explained or reviewed it. That's good.
True.
People will be delighted to hear that.
For once. We don't have to do that story now. We've kind of done it. That's great. But if you're talking about, that's on the way to Mars, but if you were dumping a body out in low Earth orbit, it's dangerous. Like if you push it out the side of the International Space Station, then there are lots of things up there that your body could run into and
become space junk.
Yeah. Now there's a lot of space. Don't get me wrong. Suddenly. So you probably don't want to. So you could hurl it down from the space station and hopefully it will get grabbed by gravity. It will come in, in the end it will deorbit and burn up, which is fine. Or you take it further up and you eject it. But that's a lot of energy to eject someone out of Earth. So you can't put it into orbit. That's the problem, or a small orbit, because it could come back and you don't want that.
No, in no sense do you want a dead person to come back.
No. Happy Easter, everyone.
Ooh.
The article was, a scientist says there's no such thing as long COVID. And I was like, all right, I'm going to have to read this thing.
Shots fired.
Yeah. Is it clickbait or not? So I had a read. And it wasn't clickbait, which is interesting. It was a researcher here in Queensland, actually, a respiratory disease expert too. And the first thing it was like, we're not saying COVID doesn't exist. We're not saying it wasn't a real thing. We're not saying people aren't affected by it over long periods of time. That's not, just so you know. Well, okay, good. But what this person was saying was, from all the research he's done, like of other different research, like a meta research thing, there's nothing in the damage that says, it's not like COVID sitting there going, it's not there. There's damage, and they've never found any reasons why these things happen. And they're across the body, right? They're everywhere. And so there's no like, oh, this is what happened. That leads to this. And that's there. Call it long COVID. And he said that what was frustrating him a little bit was, it was like saying someone, if you get attacked by an animal and it bites you on the leg, and then a year later, you're like, oh, every time it gets cold, my leg aches. You don't have long cougar. Like you just you have injuries from the cougar that have gone on. And he's saying that's really important because he says that all respiratory diseases do damage and some of them are worse than others and some people are affected worse than others. And for some reason we put this one on a pedestal and said, it's a disease called long COVID. And he said, no, it's actually impacts of having COVID.
Mm.
And we should look at that the same for every respiratory disease. So if you get pneumonia and for the rest of the time you've lost 10% of lung function, you don't have long pneumonia, you have 10% lung function reduction.
So you're not curing long COVID, you're addressing the damage. You're rehabilitating after COVID.
Yes, that's right. And some people are going to be more affected by respiratory diseases, which COVID is one of them, worse than other people, and they will be long-term damages. It was interesting because even he was admitting by calling it long COVID, you're allowing people to go, I can't come into work. Well, you know, you have to work with me because I've got long COVID, except unlike most respiratory diseases, who's saying, like, if you got pneumonia and you were sick for a long period of time, and then you were just kind of not doing very well afterwards for the rest of your life, you've lost 10% lung function or whatever, your work isn't quite as excited by, you know, they'll help you out a lot of the time, but it's not kind of like a name thing. It's just like, oh, cool. What are we meant to do? And so his thing was stop using long COVID, but also that doesn't mean stop saying that people don't have damage from anything and everything. So all respiratory diseases are the same. And he said that, and what was actually, that was the other point. He said that from his meta-analysis, COVID damage is not greater than any other respiratory disease damage on average. It's the same.
Wow.
It's the same over the population over time. And he said the only reason we didn't see the other ones was because we were all hiding inside and therefore they got knocked down to like 1% of the cases they normally have where COVID was like the thing that people were getting. And so, but that's not the way it is now. COVID is now part of the ecosystem with other respiratory diseases. You can see why I didn't want to bring it up on the podcast. I know you're recording. I just realized you're recording, but I realized.
Gee, I wonder when that started.
You can see why I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't want people to get the wrong idea of what was being said in this article. But I was fascinated by that idea of it's not a disease. It's a symptom. It's the effects of a disease over time that you know, you have a problem over time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, because there is actually a lot of people thinking that there's a way to. I mean, there was that thing that I brought up on the podcast at one point, which was that it was like a buildup of something in the blood and that you could address it by having a particular diet that was low in acid for a particular time.
I think a lot of people are trying a lot of different things. Once again, I don't want to go beyond what this person was talking about because it's not my area at all. But what this person was saying was nothing has been found in any analysis beyond that of random chance or... Mm. Lots of ideas have been tried, yes, but they've all come to the same thing of it wasn't the answer. It didn't help more than just not getting the disease and, you know, the usual, how do you handle respiratory diseases? Nothing is over time, you know, like that's, it doesn't make it. The things that make you feel better after pneumonia, you know, getting fluid out of your lungs, et cetera, are the same things that work for whatever long, you know, long COVID or whatever. It's the same thing. There's no agent. There's nothing there that's doing it. It's the damage is done and then your body responds like you build up scar tissue and that's a thing.
I mean, that's a kind of a curious thing because you're like, oh, well, I've got a cold and that's the problem. It's like, well, no, it's my immune system that's giving me all the things that I hate about a cold.
Yes.
The cold will just kill me if that doesn't happen.
Yes. Yes.
And you're like, exactly. Oh, well.
Yes.
I mean, am I suffering from a cold or am I suffering from my immune system protecting me from the cold? And then.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing.
There's like the pedantic way of referring to things and there's like the human way of referring to things.
Yes.
And the fact that you could have like long pneumonia.
Yes.
And your boss is not like.
Yeah.
I'll help out with that.
And that's the thing we have to keep in mind. Lose the concept of long COVID because it's not a useful way of putting things into a box. But that doesn't mean stop treating people who have
brain long term and
or damage from whatever the disease is. Whether you got punched in the head after a fight or you're standing on the street and got hit by a car, and that requires long term help. And so does if you get COVID and you have a very bad, you know, you're not vaccinated or you have a very strong reaction to it or whatever. It doesn't mean you don't need help. You're not making it up. It's just not a disease. It's the effects of a disease.
I've got long fist fight.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. When I read the thing about long cougar, I went, okay, that made a lot of sense to me. I went, yeah, good point. Yeah. Oh, my leg's gone. Mm. But that cougar's not around. Like, even that little cougar's like hanging onto your leg.
But at the same time, if you want to deal with cougar damage,
yes,
there's probably a very specific thing you should be doing to deal with cougar damage, which is very different to being cut with a nice clean knife.
Yes, that's true. We once almost blinded Wade Robinson with shaving cream in that room.
Not the worst mistake, that show, involving custard pies, because Wade was like, you've failed me, Dean, and next week I'm in charge and I'm bringing dairy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Christ, the whole room smells of curds.
Yeah, forever. Maybe if you go there now, Virginia Station, you'd be sitting in the back room going, ooh, the hell?
Hint of old cheese.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, your cheese is very, very evolved. We don't have cheese there. Oh, I'm so sorry.
And a little hint of menthol.
And the sobbing of a middle-aged man. Oh, my eyes. Anyway. Mine's Easter-based, just to give you a heads up.
Great.
I'm not sure if that's a thing that's going to be a problem.
Nah.
Cool.
No, I don't care about holidays anymore. Equinoxes, solstices, Easter, Christmas, fuck it. We're 12 years in. I'm not doing a 13th thing all about Easter. Christ. Anyway, I got 2 segments about chocolate eggs, but non-denominational.
No, it's just randomly chocolate eggs. That's right. Oh, yeah, me.
Just try and get your voice right.